I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is Thursday, February 15, at 1:40 p.m. Present today, we have Representative Josephson, Representative Hannan, Representative Galvin, Representative Staff, Representative Palom, Representative Ortiz, Representative Pronk, Representative Tomaszewski, Co-Chair Edgman, Co-Chair Foster, and myself, Co-Chair Johnson. We have, as our LIO moderator today, Emily Mesh. Our committee secretary is Bree Wiley. And good afternoon. Today, the committee will hear an overview of the governor's proposed FY25 budget amendments from the Office of Management and Budget. Here to present in the room today, we have Lacey Sanders, Director of the Office of Management and Budget. Director Sanders, if you would. Please introduce yourself, state your affiliation for the record, and go ahead and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Chair Johnson and members of the House Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Lacey Sanders. I am the Office of Management and Budget Director for the Office of the Governor. Today, as noted, I will be providing an overview of the governor's amended budget. Amendments were released on February 14th, so yesterday. And in the presentation before you, I have amendments that cover both operating and capital items for fiscal year 2025, the governor's budget, as well as amendments for the current year, what supplemental is what we refer to them as, for 2024. Along with the presentation, you will have in your packets four spreadsheets labeled attachments A, B, C, and D, and I will reference these as I walk through each of the details a little bit later in the slides. So, starting on slide number two, we have provided an updated version of the fiscal summary for both fiscal year 2024 as enacted by the legislature and signed into law by the governor, as well as supplementals. And on the right-hand side, we have the amended governor's budget for fiscal year 2025. Starting with 2025, the changes incorporated into this fiscal summary include an increase of $20.8 million of unrestricted general funds, $2.5 million of designated general funds, $8 million of other receipts, and $295 million of federal receipts. And again, I will walk through the details that make up those numbers on the next few slides. I'm just providing high-level change for you. Within the capital budget, the overall unrestricted general fund went down $11.7 million. Designated general funds have gone up $2.5 million. Other receipts have gone up $2.8 million, and federal receipts have gone down $52 million. For an overall total change in capital amendments being $58.3 million decrease, and the operating amendments of a $326.2 million increase. On the right-hand side of the slide, we have itemized the February 14th supplementals with the date next to them. We have an overall change for operating. It shows as a red highlighted negative number, but it's actually a total change of $500,000, which or $500, which doesn't show up on the slide. The change here for statewide operations is also is the $500,000, and I'll talk about that in statewide items. And then down under capital, we have a total of $15.4 million in supplementals that were added on February 14th. $11 million of that is unrestricted general funds, $1.2 million is other receipts, and $3.2 million of federal receipts. After the additions for fiscal year 2024, the remaining surplus is resulting in $344 million. With the amendments, overall change for the 2025 budget, we are just sitting under $1 billion in a deficit. Again, that is proposed in the governor's budget to come from the SBR and the CBR, so the Statutory Budget Reserve Fund and the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. So this is just a high-level snapshot, and happy to take questions at the high level before diving into the details. Okay. Right.
No questions? All right, thank you.
So with that, I'm going to start on slide 3 with walking through amendments to the governor's FY25 budget. You should have a large, very large spreadsheet titled Attachment A. And I'm going to go through at a high level each of the agencies based on the slide in front of us. If there are questions, I'm happy to address those questions as we go. So within the Department of Administration's amendments, there are two items within the Division of Finances budget. One is a one-time expense of $180,000 for moving expenses. Their lease, the Department of Administration's lease at the Michael J. Burns Building is expiring, and they will be leaving that space and moving to the State Office Building and need costs to be, they need additional authority to be able to make that transition from one building to another. Within the other receipts, just over $2 million, there is another increase within that number for $217,000 to address the state's accounting and human resources systems, which are Alder and IRIS. There are increased costs for those systems for security and functionality. So that is an interagency receipt that will be collected to pay for the system's continuing functionality. Within the Office of Information Technology, there are three changes that are being requested. The first is $526,000 for security licensing and $710,000 for 24/7 security logging. And these items are related to Microsoft security and ensuring that our systems are in compliance and that we are protecting against attacks, other cyber attacks or other items that may impact our security of our systems. There's also an increase of $575,000 as we've transitioned the state's technology from on-premise servers to the cloud. That transition is slated to be finalized in the current year, 2024, and we will need additional funding to maintain those cloud services now that we've transitioned. Within the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, there is an increase in $600,000 in receipts for the corporation's business and professional licensing. The what we refer to as CBPL has experienced significant increases in their operations as they're serving the public and making sure licensing processing is done in a timely fashion, and as their costs have increased, they are experiencing a need for an additional receipt authority to make sure that those licensees or those that are receiving their licenses are able to access those in a timely manner. The alcohol and marijuana control office is seeking a one-time increment of $102,000 to continue the implementation of Title IV, which is the alcohol statute rewrite. They received money through Senate Bill 9 last session that is taking additional time, and they'd like to continue that work and are asking to continue that non-permanent position working on that for one additional year. Lastly, there is $340,000 to the Division of Community and Regional Affairs to work with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium on a natural hazard planning assistance program. This is a three-year project that Commerce is asking for $430,000 from the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium to pay for that project as they support communities in disastrous planning.
Representative Hannah.
Thank you. Ms. Sanders, the last one that you just spoke of, that disaster planning at DCCED, I don't see it on the attachment A. Is it? Am I missing it? Do you know what item number it is?
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Hannon, it falls under the language items in the back of your spreadsheet. So on page 8, it falls under item number 6 or line 62. So right at the top of the page. So the packet is run based on how the bill is generated. So language items are at the back.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Continuing with the department. Oh.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, I do have a question heading back up to the admin piece where we have the security. It sounds like it's all related to technology and security. I have a 526 and a 700 plus amount. I'm just curious. It does say multi-year project, I think, on one of those line items. And I'm trying to understand why it's on the amended. It sounds like something we may have known about if it's a multi-year. And so I'm just curious to know why we're adding this now.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, so the initial funding to transition was provided in a multi-year, and so it was determining when was that funding going to be completely spent. Now that we're at the point where it's no longer available, we've come back and said, okay, we need to move forward with a request.
Finish it. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
So, under the Department of Education and Early Development, there are two requests. One is for $75,000 to convene a panel for the Alaska Reads Act. The prior legislation requested or provided that the department convene a panel and report back to the State Board of Education with recommendations on that legislation. The department has asked for $75,000 to conduct that panel. And then there is a request for $51,900 of match, general fund match, for the Carl D. Perkins Career and Technical Education Federal Award. This award is a $5.8 million federal award that requires $293,000 of match. And in order to meet that match requirement, the department needs an additional $51,900.
Madam Co-Chair?
Yes.
Is there money for the Reads Act panel to meet up in rural Alaska?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, if I'm recalling correctly, this is going to be a partially done as a video conferencing. But I can see if Tama Carson, the Admin Services Director, is on the line and she can answer that.
And through the chair, while we're arranging her to come on online, you know, there's a reference to the lens of cultural inclusion, and this is an ongoing topic with the Reads Act back to its the many, many hearings that led up to the bill passing in 2022. I remember asking if there was travel money before for the department itself to actually go out in the bush, and different topic, different time, different budget item. But when I see cultural inclusion and I look at this thing, maybe not actually going out to the bush, that just makes me wonder if there should be a funding request for travel too, for it to be out, meet out in the bush.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, I will follow up with the Department of Education and Early Development to see what their plans are for that portion of the convening.
Thank
you. Yep.
And would you like to go to the Lifeline?
Chair Johnson, is Tama available online?
I don't. Well, what is the name?
Her name is Tama Carson. If not, I can follow up and make sure we respond for the committee. Okay.
All right, very good.
Okay. With that, I'll move on to the Department of Environmental Conservation. There are two items in the Department of Environmental Conservation's amendments. The first is a change for an item that was submitted in the original governor's budget. The department is needing to relocate their air quality lab, and when the governor's budget was submitted, we put it forward, or the governor put it forward, as $87,000 in just the fiscal year 2025. After further conversations with the department, we've determined that the funding is needed, the same amount of funding is needed as a multi-year over 2 years. So we're requesting it as a supplemental to be spent over 24 and 25 so that they can get started with that move as soon as possible. The second item is just over $1.1 million in federal receipts for a federal Inflation Reduction Act grant to conduct an emissions inventory. This is a four-year project that the department is working on. Within the Department of Family and Community Services, the items for their budget are all related to one item, which is a juvenile justice counselor salary study completion that the Department of Administration's Division of Personnel and Labor Relations completed. This is the implementation. There was also supplemental requests for the current year, as this is being implemented in 2024. This brings the costs online for 2025. Under the
head of staff has a question.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson, through the chair to Director Saunders. So this actually very thing came up last year quite a bit about juvenile justice officers and pay. So I'm curious if you may know, if not, I'll ask the department itself, how did that change the vacancy rate? Because I think last year they were in like the 50% vacancy rate. So,
through the chair, representative staff, based on my conversations with the department, they don't have a change in their vacancy rates yet because it is just now being implemented. So hopefully they'll see a change in their vacancies moving forward.
Okay, thank you.
There are two items within the Department of Fish and Game's budget, both within the State Subsistence Division. The first is $205,000 of general funds. This division has is continuing to see and experience increased costs for inflationary factors, utility, travel, fuel. Along with that, they have an increase of $210,000 of federal Pittman-Robertson funds that are coming to them as they work on projects on behalf of wildlife conservation. Those two changes total $415,000. Within the Department of Health, the largest item contributing to the budget change that we're seeing is $21 million in unrestricted general funds to bring the matching level for Medicaid to what the department is projecting needing. In addition, we are bringing $293.7 million of federal funds on to the books to accurately reflect what federal receipts will be collected for Medicaid.
I'm sorry, I have to look that up.
Yeah, no worries, Madam Co-Chair. Through the chair to Director Saunders. So just a couple of things, if you humor me. First would be, I see that we put the syphilis money back in. I do not see the tuberculosis money back in from last year's multi-year appropriation. Is there any, I mean, does that mean we think TB is fine and syphilis is not, or...
Through the chair, representative staff, you are correct. That was my next note, was the $2 million was added for congenital syphilis efforts. We are still working with the Department of Health to understand the data that was collected with the last amount of funding for tuberculosis to see if that effort will continue and if that funding is providing the results that we hope or providing the information that we anticipate we would see with tuberculosis.
in a follow-up, Madam Co-Chair, directly on the Medicaid. So I do see that most of these increases, and thank you for the actual federal receipt authority, by the way. That's very helpful for us. But the actual UGF amount increases here, they look to be almost all rate rebasements, right, for provider rebasements. So in this first $5 million, this resource-based relative value scale, I don't actually know what that means. So what does that mean? I know what that is. It's a physician services reimbursement for Medicaid fee-for-service. But what's the percentage there? Because I know everything else has a percentage. And then what does that actually mean, if you know?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, do we have Josie Stern online? I am not going to be able to answer your question and have to defer to a lifeline.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thanks. Through the chair, Representative Stapp, I'll have to get back to you on an exact percentage on the increase for RBRBS.
And if I could get Josie real quick, Madam Co-Chair. And through the chair to Deputy Commissioner Stern, are those rebasements, are those required by the state? Or are they adjusted, or did the department just make the determination that they wanted to increase the reimbursement rate specifically for physician services? So I guess to refine that question, did we do that on our own as terms of maintenance of effort, or is that just something we're looking to do?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, the RBRBS rate is a federally required rate increase. For the other rates, I can get you a more detailed breakdown on whether they're required rates or their department initiated rate increases.
Thank you, cute baby.
All right, thank you, Mr.
Yeah, I might have to take this question offline because I'm just looking back at item number 12 and the Inflation Reduction Act Climate Pollution Grant of $3 million and the budget item of $1.1 million. That'd be really interesting to get some more background on that. I was not aware of that program. And this apparently has been working in smaller communities since 2005, but now it's got a big infusion of money. I'm going to guess, you know, many times over. So I'm going to, can't imagine you have somebody who can give me a quick summation online, and I'm fine with that. I'll just make a note here to meet with the department separately. But I wanted to flag this item because it's caught my attention.
Through the chair, Representative Edgen, we do have someone here in the audience, but we're happy to have that person relay the information back to the Air Quality Division to get you details on that, if that's helpful.
Yeah, we can. I don't want to take up the committee's time with an extended discussion, but I'll do that offline.
Okay. Okay. I believe I'm on the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. There are two items.
If you would refer, when you're referring to just refer to the line. If you can refer to the line number on the sheet, yeah. It's helpful for following along.
I'm on line number 27. 26 and 27 are lines 24 through 27 relate to the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. The line number 24 and 27 are just transfers between components. They're a cleanup item to make sure we have the appropriate TVEP and STEP funding, which is Technical Vocational Education Program and State Training Employment Program Authority, in the correct place. The largest change is on item number 25. There is an increase in the projected revenue under the State Training and Employment Program by $1.6 million. And so the department is asking for additional authority to make sure they can provide the grants and services that funding is used for when it's collected. The next item on line 26 is $118,000 for a workers' compensation hearing officer study implementation by the Department of Labor. Again, the Department of Administration's Division of Personnel and Labor Relations completed the study, and now we're looking to implement that. moving on to the Department of Natural Resources on line 28. There is an increase of $578,000 for a lease in Fairbanks for the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys. Their 10-year lease expired. They worked with the Department of Transportation's facilities section to try and find a new location. They were unable to do that and are entering into a continued lease for the space that they're in. That renewal has an increased cost of $578,000 annually. In addition, there's $1 million for the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys. It's $1 million to provide Alaska's future with geothermal energy. The division will be standing up a geothermal categorization work through the establishment of a few new positions that will work on geothermal projects. They will be partnering with university, federal, native, and private sector partners for that work.
Madam Co-Chair, again, I don't want to sort of take up a lot of time here, but this is another interesting item that ties into, I think, a couple projects in the Renewable Energy Grant Program last year, as well as money that the university is seeking to get. There's a bigger picture behind here. It would be wonderful to have that conversation at some point. And again, I just want to flag that because there's more than meets the eye just on the surface on this one.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, yes, we do have staff listening, so they will make note to ensure that you get additional information on those items. Moving in on down to the Department of Public Safety, the items on public safety are mixed in together. So they start on line number 30. They're lines 30, and there's another one, I'll have to come to that line in just a moment, but there was a compensation study for forensic scientists 1, 2, and 3, which is a job class series that was completed by the Department of Administration's Division of Personnel and Labor Relations. There is funding in the budget to implement that that salary study to provide those classes the wages that they are comparable to other work. And that is, like I said, that is spread through multiple items. There are on line 31 in the village public safety officers component, they are working really hard to identify federal grant funds that can be used for the VPSO program. And as they are applying for those grants, one of them is to provide safety gear. We're putting federal receipt authority online to ensure that if they receive that grant, they can receive those federal funds. It's $25,000 of federal receipts. On page 4, line 32, under victim services, there is a technical correction to the restorative justice account. Each year, the Department of Revenue calculates the amount of PFDs that would have gone to convicted felons, and those funds are then allocated in the budget to various entities. And the statute provides for a certain percentage to each of those entities. There was a miscalculation in the governor's budget, and so $99,000 should be replaced with those restorative justice accounts. And you'll see an offset later where we're depositing those funds into another location under fund capitalizations. So this is a technical cleanup to ensure that we have the correct allocation based on statute. And that, as you'll see on the next item, item 33 is the same item, but it's allowing for the expenditure from the restorative justice account for the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. Item number 34 is a new division director for the Victim Services Division. The Department of Public Safety is reorganizing, or they're not reorganizing, they are organizing all of their victim services functions across the department into a new victim services division so that all of the work that they are providing to victims is coordinated in an effort and not siloed. They are asking for a new division director to oversee that work, and that is the $254,000 and one new PFT on line 34.
Madam Chair.
Representative Plum.
Thank you, Chair. Through the Chair. So I wanted to back up on the restorative justice account. It's a little confusing. This says there's a decrement and then there's an increment, and one of them's, I guess my understanding is that when I saw the budget, in the governor's budget, the percentage was a little too high on one. It was only supposed to be like 10 to 12, and it was 14%. So you're taking that back, and you're giving it to VCCB, or are those totally separate? Are you? I'm trying to figure out how those two interact.
Through the Chair, Representative Cologne, there is a total dollar value that's available. It's just over $9 million. And of that $9 million, a percentage goes here, a percentage goes here, and a percentage goes here. In the governor's budget, instead of a 3% allocation, we provided a 4% allocation. So we exceeded the limit that was in statute. So we're reducing the amount, which makes that pie, there's some of that available to go to another organization still within that statutory framework. So the $9 million still applies and can still be distributed among those allocations. And that's what these technical corrections do. They get us in line with statute.
So can I have a follow-up?
Yes.
So you're saying that decrement, it is, you said it's going to another organization. Are you talking about VCCB, or are they spreading it among?
Correct.
Okay.
And Representative Colomb, I know you have several items in here, so if it would be helpful, we have a spreadsheet that breaks down the percentages and how much goes to each one of those organizations, and we can provide that as a follow-up.
So I'm aware of the percentages. I guess what I'm trying to get at, if you're bringing one down because of statute, I understand that. But is there any UGF filling the difference? Is that what I'm seeing?
Yep. Okay. Through the Chair, Representative Cologne. So on item number 32, it's a fund source change. It's reducing the restorative justice and providing UGF in place of that. But on the next item number 33, there is additional available that can go, and it is not offsetting. It's just additional that goes into the Violent Crime Compensation Board.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Okay.
While we're paused there, on item 34, Public Safety Subcommittee has already heard about the not reorganization, but the organization of this. So did the submitted budget did not include the new position, but have moved everything, but still needs a director position created?
Through the Chair, Representative Hannon, that is correct. The at the time the original submission came out, it was unclear the roles of the existing executive directors in some of the other organizations and how those interact with the overall leadership of the Department of Public Safety. The Department of Public Safety came back and provided that structure, and so there is a request to have a specific division director over this new division.
Okay, so quick follow-up. Just clarifying, so the department did not initially think they were going to need a new director, and then have realized in reorganizing or organizing under this framework, they need a director.
Through the Chair, Representative Hannon, yes. Through further conversations, it's been very clearly made that they need a director.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair, just a quick question. To the OMB director, it's presumed then that the new VPSO division, the funding for the director there will be sort of embedded in the overall funding amount for the VPSO program.
Through the Chair, Representative Edgman, I don't believe the VPSO program is under the Victim Services Division.
Correct. Okay. And I should have been more clear.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
I'm just sort of reading in the fact that there's no budget to ask for the new VPSO division, a new director. I'm actually meeting with the mayor in a couple hours, presumably. But the funding is embedded in the program itself, the VPSO program.
Through the chair, Representative Edgeman, yes, the VPSO director is within the VPSO budget. That is different than the Victim Services,
yes,
and that is already embedded in their budget.
Yeah, and I recognize that. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Again, line 35 is to ensure that there is sufficient federal receipts within their admin services component. Line 36 is an addition that we spoke about earlier for the, this is a separate item. This is a compensation study for the Criminal Justice Information Services Administrator 1 and 2 class series that was also completed and, again, ensures that they have sufficient funding in their budget to pay for those salary changes that were completed. On page 5, item number 37 is a continuation of their compensation study for the forensic scientists that I spoke about earlier. So it's just multiple places throughout, multiple components throughout their budget. Item number 38 is a request to expand the state's toxicity lab testing and testimony. This request adds a full-time forensic scientist for chemistry position that will be located in Anchorage. The Department of Public Safety has experienced a significant increase in the number of tests that are required for driving offenses that may not also be alcohol, but that could be marijuana under the influence. And given the capacity that they're maxed out, they need an additional position to be the expert in providing that testing as well as testifying when there are criminal offenses that need to go to court. Okay, moving on to the Department of Revenue. The first item is a salary adjustment. This was $161,000 for the Alaska Retirement Management Board. When the budget put forward had salary adjustments in it, it excluded this item. We have to transfer funding from, it's an interagency transfer from one component to another. And because of that, this funding was an oversight and should have been included in the governor's budget. It's bringing receipt authority online to pay salaries. Item number 40 in the Department of Revenue is for the Child Support Enforcement Division. They receive federal reimbursement for foster care children that are eligible under Title IV, Title VI, which one it is. When those number of children that are eligible goes down, they can't collect the federal receipts. They are seeing a decline in those that are eligible, and so therefore are requesting a fund source change from federal receipts to unrestricted general funds. As their costs have continued to maintain, they need to be able to pay for those services that they're providing but do not have the receipt authority to collect those federal receipts. In the Child Support Enforcement Division on line 41, there was a class study for the Child Support Enforcement Specialist. This class study was completed and results in an increase to pay the salaries for fiscal year 2025. Again, that was completed in November of 2023, and so therefore we're putting forward an amendment to be included.
Okay, and we have a question.
Yeah, thank you, ma'am. Co-chair Johnson, through the chair to our wonderful new director of OMB, Ms. Saunders. So on number 40, It says that basically a portion of child support enforcement activities supporting children in foster care are not eligible for federal reimbursement under Title IV. What does that actually mean? So, like, what are those things that the OCS people do? Because, like, what exactly are those things? Do we know?
For the chair, representative staff, this isn't necessarily what the Office of Children's Support, or excuse me, the Office of Children's Services is doing. This is the work that is completed by Child Enforcement Division and ensuring that, so if they are collecting, you know, child support from somebody that they're working on, if the child is eligible, then we can collect on federal receipts to for the work that we're doing as in the Department of Revenue. And so if those children are no longer eligible, then we can't collect on those federal receipts.
Okay, quick follow-up, Madam Co-Chair. So thank you. I'll clarify then what I'm trying to ask. So what is that difference? What is that Title IV difference? So what is, do we know? Like, I don't know what Title IV is. I'm probably not smart enough to read it all. But I would say there's probably some material difference, right? So it'd be just interesting to know.
Through the chair, representative staff, I don't know the difference. And I believe that we have Eric DeMolin online from the Department of Revenue, and he is the admin services director and should be able to answer your question. If not, he can get you an answer.
Mr. DeMolin? Mr. DeMolin?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
For the record, Eric Mullen, Admin Services Director for the Department of Revenue. May you please repeat the question so I can write it down?
Yeah, through the chair to Mr. Mullen, thank you, as representative staff. So I'm just curious as far as what the material difference is between this thing that we can't actually get the federal authority, it's, it looks like it references Title IV. So what is the difference between the children that we can get the federal receipt authority for and the children that we can't, or the service that we can and the service that we can't, if that's is concise?
Yes, through the chair, representative staff, I will have to get back to you with more details on the eligibility criteria within Title IV. It has to do with benefits being received that is also within the Department of Health and Social Services, and how we have to account for those benefits received at both those agencies. So I have to go through and get with the program managers that we have here at DOR, and we can get you a response in writing if that's agreeable.
Sure.
All right, thank you. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Director, if I can go sort of high level for a moment. We're seeing a lot of the class studies. They always adjust in increases. That doesn't surprise me. Is there a way to know how much, what percent are complete of the whole? And also, so question number one, is there a way to know what percent are complete? Question number two is, what's the pecking order here? If I'm a child support enforcement person, then I'm, I guess, getting a pay raise. And if I'm not yet studied, quote unquote, then I don't. Is that
through the chair, Representative Josephson? If I could answer it in a broad, just a little bit, I'll try and keep on track here. So classification studies are difficult, and the sense that how do you pick, right? Right now, the Division of Personnel and Labor Relations does maintain a list. That list is quite extensive. There are union impact or input that goes into that list. There is also just a first in, first out portion of that list. We only have so much capacity in the state to complete studies. A number that I've heard since being new to this role is that if we were taking a look at the list, it would take 4 years to complete all the salary studies on that list because there are so many. What I will say to that, though, is, and I've talked about it before in this committee, is we are in the process of completing that statewide salary study. And my hope, or our hope, is that with that study being implemented, it may reduce the need for all of these one-off studies that we are seeing, because we are seeing an increase in the number of requests to ensure that the employees are being paid for like work performed. meet your answer?
It's helpful. Thank you.
I believe I am on line 43 of page, or 42? Oh, yep. Thank you. 42. Within the Department of Revenue's criminal investigation units, this is a very small division. It has 7 investigators and 1 support staff. And this division has been lucky enough to not have experienced vacancies. And therefore, they right now, if you were to look at their budget, they have a vacancy factor applied to them. And with being fully staffed, they are short funded. And it is a very small division that doesn't have the capacity to transfer from other lines to pay for the cost of paying their employees. So this provides $39,000 of general funds to ensure that they have enough money in their budget to have a zero vacancy factor. The last item on the page, item number 43, is for the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. They are requesting $150,000 to work on a communications plan. And very high level.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. We have Representative Galvin followed by Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson, through the chair. Just to revisit what I think I heard from Revenue, line 42, we're lucky to have full staff, and so it's going to cost us more than we anticipated. So what I'm hearing is then we didn't have it budgeted for full staff, and so we were surprised that we have full staff. And now we need to pay for full staff?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, when we budget in every component, we put a vacancy factor on.
Okay.
It is not uncommon for smaller divisions to not have a vacancy factor. This one doesn't have sufficient funding to pay for 100% of those staff that are on board. So, yes, we need an amendment to ensure they have enough money in their budget to pay their staff for the full year.
Thank you. And is that not typically absorbed within the department, kind of depending on how different agencies within that department are doing with their vacancy? That's not automatically absorbed or dealt with?
For the chair, Representative Galvin, no. We can't cross certain appropriation lines.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, maybe I'll give an example, within the Department of Corrections, all of their institutions are in the same appropriation, so we were able to move to cover.
Mm-hmm.
If a division is on its own, it can't move from one other division to help absorb that vacancy. So in this case, this is why we're limited in coming back to the legislature and saying we need the full amount in order to pay for the employees for a full year.
What an unusual problem. Oh, thank you.
Light reminder to direct the questions through the chair. Just to keep the protocol consistent around the table. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Edgman. Through the chair, I'm going to ask same topic, slightly different. Is this the only place we're going to see that in the budget and amendments, that they are the only one with fully staffed, zero vacancy, and no ability to absorb it? Or are we going to see this anywhere else?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, off the top of my head, I am not thinking of where we might have another instance like this. But it is, like I said, it's not uncommon, especially when we have small divisions with very few people in them.
Would like to see more divisions with this problem, zero vacancy.
Representative Klum.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair, my question is around the permanent fund ask. This is to enhance a communication program. So is this UGF money that they're requesting for a communications program, or can you clarify where the money's coming from?
Through the chair, Representative Colomb, it's coming from permanent fund corporation receipts. So it's not general funds, but it's the funding source that the Permanent Fund Corporation uses to pay for their services.
Okay. And can I have a follow-up?
Follow-up.
So for investment opportunities, talent recruitment, innovative partnerships. So I'm trying to figure out, is this like a trying to, do you know what this campaign's supposed to be doing? Like, are we trying to attract talent, or are we trying to get a brand out there? It's just kind of.
Through the chair, Representative Coulombe, I would defer to the Permanent Fund Corporation to speak to their vision on what they're hoping that is done. And if you'd like, we can follow up to provide more robust clarification on what they're doing.
And if I could just interject, as timing, I think, would have it, they're having an open house tonight. So
they're having what?
An open house.
Oh.
I believe it's tonight.
Oh, I did. 5 to 6.
5 to 6. Okay. But certainly details handy. But there might be some opportunity, because I was looking at the same question, Representative Coulombe, and I had the same thoughts you did. And I might just ask that question tonight.
Thank you.
Okay. Moving on to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I'm on page 6 on line number 44. The first item is...
Ms. Sanders, we did have a question, Representative Cortez.
Thank you, through the chair. Lacey, Ms. Sanders, excuse me. This particular area starts off with an $8,365,000 reduction in UGF anyway. Can you just kind of give, because I don't see, and it's highlighted in red, and when I'm looking at this, I'm not seeing any red or reductions in relationship to that. So can you just give me a little overview as to where we're going with a summary of where we're going with this? Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, so one of the notes is that there is an item on page 8 for its line number 66 for the Alaska Marine Highway System. As part of last year's budget for 2024, there was a $10 million one-time appropriation. In the governor's submission on December 14th, that reversal of that one-time funding was not included in our information. Ledge Finance pointed it out. They have it included in their information. So one-time funding has to be reversed out. So this is a technical correction to ensure that our budget is accurately portraying what should be in or out. So that one-time funding is being reversed.
Okay. Thank you. Yep. That works.
Okay. So going back to line number 44, I'll walk through these items fairly quickly. The first item is utilities cost increases for various regions within the Department of Transportation. So facility costs, they've experienced a 15% increase in their utilities and continue to experience that inflationary cost. The second item is an increase on line number 45 for $480,000. This is an agreement with the municipality of Anchorage for the transfer of responsibility agreement, a TORA agreement. And the cost for that responsibility of the state-owned traffic signal system has increased in the Anchorage area and is resulting in a need for an additional funds. The next item is $500,000 to support agricultural road maintenance. So this is the state assuming responsibility for maintenance and operations of roads that currently don't have oversight. And so as the department ramps up that effort, there's an increase of $500,000 to support that effort. The next item.
Jump in here? We do have a question on item 46.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Edgman. Through the chair to Director Saunders. So, what is that? Because when I see that, I think of, okay, rural areas. So, we have areas in Fairbanks, Allison Farm Road, that type of stuff. And there's areas, I think, across the state, maybe down in Representative Cronk's area. But typically we have a process, we have road service areas in the borough that get money to do that. And so I heard you say the state's taking over that maintenance, which I think it's fine, but it just begs the question is if we want to give money to do that, why not just contract somebody to do that unless we want DOT to do that too? So thoughts.
Representative Stapp, I have. Admin Services Director Don Pannone, and he may be able to provide an explanation on if we're taking it over or if we're contracting it.
Yeah, thank you.
And where is it?
Yeah, for the record, Don Pannone, Director of Program Management and Administration at DOT. Through the chair, Representative Stapp, excellent question. Unfortunately, I don't have all the details today, but these are roads where it's unclear where the ownership is, or they're not affiliated. They serve mostly rural areas and agricultural areas. It's very likely that we would be able to contract these out to contractors with graders, but at this time we haven't. I don't have all the information. We can follow up.
I'll defer to Representative Cronk. I guess.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, I also am not clear on where these agricultural roads are. Is it primarily out in interior? Is it where we see a lot of agriculture in the valley? It would be helpful, I think, to know that, since this is, I think, $500,000, and I don't see any clarity on that, if you know.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, so this is an increment to the Northern Region Highways and Aviation component. So it would be in the northern region of Alaska, which is one of our three regions for DOT.
Representative Cronk.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And actually, I'm going to add a little bit in depth here. The governor came out to Nenana, and there's some ag areas that the state put in roads for that they don't maintain, and these are areas that are producing food. And some of them are just asking for a little help, like, can we get a grader blade down here like twice a year? So we have to work through the system. It's not technically adding them to the system, but we're trying to figure out a way to, the state did this, so can we help these farmers, at least kind of semi-maintain the road, because they have a lot of customers coming in. They're producing a lot of food. So I'm probably just touching on a little bit of it, but there are areas there that are just out in the middle of nowhere that we put the roads in, but then we just left them. So I think this is a way to try to figure out how to help those situations.
Madam Chair.
Yep.
Thank you. Through the chair. And my question for Ms. Saunders will be, when we did the Nenana project and put those roads in, it was DNR money to build the road and put the bridge in. And so my only concern, if we're going to build it, we need to maintain it. But are we taking all, has DNR exhausted all of the money for the roads to develop that ag project, and now it will be a DOT, or does DNR still have some, they're developing it and DOT has to come by and maintain it. So I want to just, yeah.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, prior to me being in this role, I will have to do some research and follow up on that.
And we have Representative Cronk.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And the roads I'm talking about are prior to the Nanatachaket agriculture area. These are prior agriculture areas, let's say we did 30 years ago, that we put the roads in and just kind of left them. Hey, you guys, figure it out on your own. So I know where you're talking about the new area, but these are older areas that we, wanted to develop. Typical, we spent some money and we just left them, so there are people were asking for a little bit of help. So, and they were out of there were a road service area, but it's defunct. So there's no way for them to figure out where those funds are. So.
We're on line number 47 now. This is receipt authority for the rural airport leasing receipts for law enforcement support in ADAC. There are, if you're aware of the ADAC airport, they fly staff on the plane to provide law enforcement screening for that rural airport. And so in order to collect the receipts and use the receipts to pay for that, we're asking Alaska Airlines pays for that service. We have to have receipt authority to collect those receipts to use it towards the staff flying back and forth.
Just take a brief at ease.
Okay.
you would, we'll just try to figure out exactly our plan for this, for our meeting here. So I think we'll try to get through the UGF, just the UGF increases.
Do you want me to just show you that?
Yeah.
I had different notes, but I didn't even get to this.
I know, we did.
So let me
We kind of got off onto the end of the weeds maybe a little bit with our line numbers, and so I'm going to go ahead and give the latitude to our presenter to go ahead and go back to her way she kind of started the meeting, and then we'll we can, you know, address things individually if there's questions, if we have questions, but maybe get off onto the, move it along a little bit. Thanks.
Okay. So the last items for the Department of Transportation have to do with the international airport systems. There are several items in here that address audits, financial services, training and screening programs, an increased contract for parking at the Ted Stevens International Airport, and lastly, an airport police and flyer completion of a class study. So those items are all other receipts. And so with that, I'm going to move down to the next item, which is the university's budget. There is one item in the university's budget. This is mental health trust receipts. There was a project that was identified by the Mental Health Trust Authority, the Mental Health Trust Authority, and they have worked with the university and determined that that project will not be moving forward and asked that item be removed from the budget. So that's a technical correction. The last item is under fund capitalizations. It's $198,000, and this is an item that we were talking about earlier with the Crime Victim Compensation Fund. So restorative justice funds are available to be deposited into the Crime Victim Compensation Fund and then therefore used later in the budget by the Crime Victim Compensation Board. So this increase of $198,000 brings the total from $991,000 to $1,189,000. Again, this is a technical correction to make sure that we are following the statute on that provision. I'm going to move along to the capital budget for fiscal year 2025. And the amendments that were incorporated. The attachment is attachment number, letter B.
E or D?
B as in boy. So the first item, and I'm going to summarize these, is within the Department of Administration. This is a capital project to provide for infrastructure within the Office of Information Technology. We have aging infrastructure that needs replacement. This provides $1 million to start that. It is not all-encompassing of the entire need within infrastructure replacement, but provides an annual amount to continue moving forward with that replacement. There are several items within the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. In the Federal Receipt Authority, there is $15 million for the Broadband Digital Equity Capacity Grant Program. This is grant funding that is distributed out under the Broadband Office. There are two Division of Insurance projects. One is $2.5 million for the Division of Insurance to develop a comprehensive healthcare reimbursement reform package. This is due to the repeal of the 80th percentile. And then there is a $5 million request that will be transferred to or work in coordination with the Department of Health on healthcare innovation programs. And these two projects work together It is just dependent on where the statutory authority lies as they are working to try and reduce healthcare costs in Alaska. And they're both related to healthcare reform and improvement. But again, they provide the authority for them to move forward on those projects. Within the Department of Environmental Conservation, there are two items. The first is $300,000 for a food safety and sanitation program information management system replacement. The current system is set to expire and will no longer be supported, and the Department of Environmental Conservation is going to a system that will be used nationally. In addition, there is just under $3 million in federal funding for grants for small water systems. This was funding provided by the bipartisan infrastructure law, and it provides grants to support various activities such as emergency generators, addressing emerging contaminants, and completing federally required lead service line inventory in the state. In the Department of Fish and Game, there is an amendment to pull back a $7.5 million request for the vessel replacement. After the budget was released, the Department of Fish and Game received engagement with Trident over a vessel that they are donating to the state of Alaska to use for this replacement vessel. There's a corresponding capital supplemental item later that I will discuss to talk about refurbishing that Trident vessel in lieu of purchasing a new vessel. In the Department of Law, there is a $385,000 federal award that they have received to modernize their technology, and they are asking to be able to gather that receipt authority and get moving on updating the technology that they use. Within the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, there are two federal congressionally directed spending appropriations that Department of Military and Veterans Affairs is receiving on behalf of communities. The first is $655,000 for the Seward Bear Creek Service Area Flood Mitigation Project, and the second is $5.1 million for the rock slide mitigation efforts in the Skagway Port. So this allows them to receive those federal funds and pass them along.
Madam Chair. Representative Hannon.
Through the chair, Ms. Sanders, the only thing my question is, is this an unusual thing for congressional spending to communities to go to military and veterans affairs, or is there some tie to military that I don't understand in those?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs has several federal programs that they work with, so like Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and that is likely the programs that are providing the grant funding for these.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So lastly, we have the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, and the bulk of the funding for the department is within this spreadsheet in the change. It has to do with both the Airport Improvement Program and the Surface Transportation Improvement Program. The governor's budget that comes out on December 15th puts in what we anticipate the cost will be. Once we've worked through the SIP process and we have all of the allocations, which you will see in this backup, we revise and provide the allocation information to the legislature, and that is the result of the change on the screen, is the, based on the allocations, what should the match be presented at and what should the federal request be presented at.
So is that a long way of saying that once the state's revised SIP program submission goes and gets accepted, this list could change?
Through the altered. Chair Edgman, this is what the SIP has been submitted as. So once it's approved, we have what will be put forward. If there are any changes in the result of the approval process, then we would have to make modifications.
So, Madam Co-Chair, so I just want to be clear that the STIP process was submitted, but basically some of the projects were basically rejected from what I can read from the letter that was sent to us this morning from the department. Or if not rejected, basically redo or omit these, take these out, and resubmit. And I just want to be clear about that. And if that's not the case, please explain.
For the record, Dom Pannone, Director of Program Management and Administration at Department of Transportation. Through the chair, Representative Edgman, the way that these allocations work, we do have a contingency allocation. So if these were appropriated as is and there were changes, we can move from any named allocation to the contingency allocation. That provides the department flexibility in the normal course of the year because changes do happen. Aside from that, the response we got from the Federal Highway Administration could alter the projects that we have, though we may be able to resolve that in FY25, which is what these allocations are for, so next July. By then, we would have hoped to resolve the Tier 2 and Tier 3 points in the FHWA letter. So it may change, but it's also possible that we resolve. But yes, as Director Sanders states, this is what is in programmed for FY25 in our current STIP.
That wasn't very clear to me.
Through the chair.
Because to me, it seems like if these projects get rejected, they come out. Is it that simple or not?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, it's a conversation with the federal entity back and forth. So their declaration of what should be in and out, we will work with them to see if we can resolve the questions that make them then eligible. Does that help answer your question?
It does, but again, the letter that was sent to all of us as legislators from the Department of Transportation this morning seemed to, you know, the attachments seemed to indicate, and I'm not looking for any confrontation or anything, but seemed to indicate a flat rejection of a number of items that didn't go through the local process or certainly weren't eligible for the STIP process that flows through the department. So all I'm asking is if in fact the federal department holds firm and you're saying it might be a negotiation or we might be able to wiggle around and somehow get funding these items, this isn't measuring up to me.
For the record, Dom Pannone and through the chair, Representative Edgman, from the department's perspective, the letter had three tiers. One outlined the steps that we would take to get the STIP approved. And then in the second tier, it outlined steps to amend the concerns in if we choose, and it outlined the steps to work with our municipal planning organizations to have those projects that they are rejecting in their transportation improvement plans. So there's work to be done on that. That's a fair statement.
I think there's a more eloquent.
But
Representative Ortiz
is here. Thank you. I'm also a little bit confused. So let me see if I can get it spelled out more clearly here. Under federal, there's a reduction of $78,207,000. Is that in any way a reflection of the letter that we received or the actions taken is that a reflection of any way of that $78 million?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, no, that is not a reflection of the letter.
What do you do with that?
That is correct.
Okay, so then I'm still then unclear. Why is there that reduction of the $78 million?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, on the December 15th budget that we submitted for the legislature, we estimated what our federal receipt and what our federal match would be at the time. That was prior to the final STIP being submitted in January 19th.
Okay.
So The document before you reflects what the STIP is as submitted in that January submission. Any changes that occur after would be amendments that we would bring forward to you later or address next year when we come back before the legislature.
And that's helpful. So what this then is, the $78 million is a reflection that we overestimated how much money that we would be requesting in the STIP. Is that correct?
For the record, Don Pannone, through the chair, Representative Ortiz. So we overestimated the amount of authority we needed in federal revenues for FY25. The FHWA doesn't issue an apportionment or formula funds memo until typically December. Some of those funds are carried forward from the previous year, for which we already have match and legislative authority. And so we did get final numbers in December and did adjust down. So yes, the numbers were larger than we needed to ask for at the time, but the best we had in our projections.
Can I sum it up, Madam Co-Chair?
Please.
Stay tuned.
I guess I shouldn't laugh. But
I think it is, it probably is not clear to you, Tier 1. I was just looking at the letter that was submitted, and it's, I guess, clear cut in one hand, and the other hand, maybe not so. So stay tuned.
Can I?
Representative Joseph.
Through the chair, on capital line 14, road and bridge completion, are those the, I'll say, disputed bridges relating to the Mancho project? Johnson and the other two bridges?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, no. This is funding for the state to step in and address roads that we have emergency issues that need to be addressed or don't have a federal project to address something. Dom, do you want to provide any more information on that?
And for the record, Dom Pannone. Through the chair, Representative Josephson. So these are typically smaller projects where state funds will expedite a small repair that's critical to that community, or where there's an emergent need, or where a project's already been proceeded and they need a little more funds to complete. So these are typically it's more prudent to it's quicker to get the results for the community and for the state using state funds.
The next two slides are supplemental items. I'll start with operating supplemental items on slide 5. Just at a high level, within the Department of Environmental Conservation, I spoke to this item earlier. It's $78,500. We had it as a request in the FY25 budget and are asking for it to be a multi-year so that the department can move quickly on the air quality lab relocation. Within the Department of Public Safety, there was a request for a salary study implementation that had an error in the calculation and it was overstated by $100,000. So there's a technical correction in the supplementals to address that. And lastly, under special appropriations, we received two more judgments and settlements for from the Department of Law totaling $544,700. As I noted in my last presentation, we received those throughout the year. As those are wrapped up, we'll continue to bring those forward to the legislature as those are finalized for inclusion in the appropriation bills. And then lastly, we have capital supplemental requests. As I note on slide 6, as I noted earlier, we have a $3 million request to retrofit the Trident vessel that was donated to the Department of Fish and Game. Within the Department of Natural Resources, we have three new projects. One is for Alaska Carbon Capture Utilization and Storage Database. This is a federal grant that the department is receiving. There's also a $2.2 million in federal receipt authority as a grant for resilient food system infrastructure grants that the Department of Natural Resources will be able to make. And lastly, there is $1.2 million for fire protection fleet maintenance and replacement. And that is within the fire protection area of the Department of Natural Resources. Lastly, we have an $8 million award of general funds, a project for $8 million for the Dalton Highway. This is to respond to maintenance that is required or necessary on that road as it is deteriorating very quickly and resulting in damage to several vehicles, and it needs emergency repairs made to it. And with that, those are high level, quick items, and happy to take any last questions.
Do we have any? Does anyone have any questions that they've been saving? Saving up. Okay. I just want to make sure that, I mean, I know this is a capital thing, but we probably want to be kept apprised of the what's going on with the. There's new if there's any new information. I know that we probably will be, but on the STIP and whatever is transpiring there. So this committee will not be meeting tomorrow. Our next meeting is Monday, February 19th at 8:30 a.m. to hear legislation. We do appreciate the presentation today. Thank you. And seeing no more additional business before the committee, we are adjourned at 3 o'clock p.m.